Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Jamie K. Reaser. She's a writer, ecologist, and co-founder of the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center and World Migratory Bird Day. And we're talking about the book that she co-edited with J. Drew Lanham, Dawn Songs, A Birdwatcher's Field Guide to the Poetics of Migration. Jamie, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you for the invitation, Mark. I'm pleased to be here, especially since it's just one day after World Migratory Bird Day.
I know. I hate to say this, and it's no reflection on you. Any day like this where the weather's okay and it's May, I would rather be in the field.
I hear you. Me too.
But thank you for doing this, because I'm sure you feel the same way, too. Dawn Songs is a really unique bird book. It was not what I imagined, and it really surprised me. Talk to me about how this book came about.
So this book was actually inspired by the 30th anniversary of World Migratory Bird Day, which was last year. World Migratory Bird Day was initially International Migratory Bird Day. It was started in 1993 by the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center and Partners in Flight. So I wanted to bring, and I was very much involved in the initiation of International Migratory Bird Day from the both Smithsonian side, and I was co-chair of the working group under Partners in Flight that brought it forward. So I felt I really wanted to bring full circle for the 30th anniversary the essence of what International Migratory Bird Day was intended to be, which was all about celebration. It was about honoring migratory birds and the phenomenon of migration, and out of that, inspiring action to protect migratory birds. So I started contemplating, you know, what could I bring forward for the 30th anniversary, and reached out to my literary colleague, Drew Lanham, who's faculty at Clemson University. And together we conceived of Dawn Songs.
Now, how did you solicit the poems and the written pieces, the essays that are in this book?
So we reached out to people that we knew in our professional networks as scientists, but also our professional networks as literary scholars. And invited those individuals that we knew had one foot in both worlds, right, that they were both birders and had a passion for narrative writing, whether that was poetry or prose. And then we also reached out to individuals who we knew that worked more on the human dimensions end of conservation, eco-psychology, for example, that also had a passion for writing, so that we had voices coming from both directions, those that would speak about and on behalf of the birds with a lot of ornithological knowledge, but also those whose voices would carry kind of the more human dimensions of how birds invite us to become better people in many ways.
Were these pieces written specifically for the book, or they had been published before?
Very few pieces have actually been published before.
Almost. Wow, so people created all this work for the book?
Yes.
That's amazing, Jamie.
I'd say at least 90% is new work.
Wow.
Just for the book, yeah.
That's impressive.
It is, especially given that we pulled this off from start to finish in just about, I think it was 7 months.
Wow.
And we've got, 60-some authors in here, yeah.
You have the first essay in the book, and it's a great one. You're doing field work in Belize, mist netting for Manomet. And you talk about how even in 1991, people were already noticing a dramatic decline in neotropical birds. And needless to say, that hasn't been abated. It's only gotten worse. And you use a phrase that I just really, really loved after reading it in the book, showing up for the birds. Talk to me and expand on that.
Yeah, the idea, kind of play on the perception that carries through a lot of bird watching, and that is we're waiting for the birds to show up for us, right? Get up in the morning, and you know, you're going out to your favorite birding spot and waiting for the world to wake up a little bit, and you know, hoping something is going to come into binocular view, or, you know, even better, you know, fancy digital camera view, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then, you know, in the winter months, people are often putting out bird feeders in the hoping that the birds will show up, you know, for them within sight. So it's kind of a play on what is it for us to show up for the birds? And, of course, that's both literal and metaphoric in the way I use it in the piece. So there's showing up in our full sense of presence, you know, and awareness. Poet Mary Oliver talks about, you know, devotion and attention as two of the optics, you know, through which we can show up and actualize our presence in relationship to nature and our human nature. But there's also showing up from the standpoint of being of service. Service is something that's greater than ourselves. And the two really go hand in hand. In order to truly be of service of the natural world, one has to be observant, you know, to know what's helpful as opposed to moving forward with what might be a positive intent, but not enough information to really carry it forward in a way that's going to make the difference and makes the difference.
What's fascinating is that you, at the end of the book, you have almost a teacher's guide. It can be a personal guide too, of how to use this book to further your understanding. And that's because the poems and the prose pieces are gathered in certain sections, and I'm going to read them, and I want you to sort of talk about what each one means to you or what you mean by it. Like, the first section is to know. How would you expand on that?
Yeah, to know is really, again, getting back to that sense of intimacy with the natural world through presence and observation. So a lot of the works in this section are very observer-oriented. They're stories of individual birds and individual places. They're narratives of life history. They're narratives of the distinctiveness of experience of one species versus another species, or one habitat versus another habitat, and who's showing up there from both the bird and the human perspective. So I guess a simple way of capturing it is these are the natural history notes in the collection.
To wonder.
To wonder is to move into that space of not knowing it all, right? Not having all the answers. It's that lens of curiosity that we take out into the natural world. Which in many respects is a precursor of knowing, right? So the two chapters are intimately related with each other. But in this collection, it's also about holding a space for the unknowable, right? Those big elements of wondering about birds and about our own human nature that are unanswerable, and inhabiting that space of wonderment and awe as a way of, as you spoke about it earlier, showing up in the world.
I love that section, because the great thing about birds is that they're around year-round, and there's always something that you can see that just knocks you out. That just is like, what did they do there? And I always love that feeling when I'm in the field.
Yeah, that's a sense of being truly awestruck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
To lament.
To lament is a chapter, or section better stated, that speaks to all the ways in which birds show up as a master in our lamenting, our grieving process, from one perspective. So that's to lament the loss of birds, lament the loss of bird habitat. It's also the storyline about the way birds often show up for us as symbols, as metaphors for our own laments, our own losses and griefs, doves being an iconic example in cultures across the world. But lament also has a deeper meaning in this section. To lament can, through word derivation, be associated with to cry for a vision, to cry out for an understanding of one's purpose in the world. And so to lament in this section is also about pieces that tap into that yearning for belonging, for purpose, for being part of something greater than the self.
To celebrate. And I tell you, every spring that I hear my first oven bird, there's like a party going on in my head.
Yeah, teacher, teacher, teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so to celebrate, I think, is probably the most obvious of the intents of the section. So these are all works that are about celebrating individual species, about celebrating, you know, that moment of joy of the return, mm-hmm. right, when the familiar voices are back in the trees and shrubs again, you know, are coming out. Right, back into the world after the winter dormancy period. It's the celebration of birds as they relate to the human experience in all sorts of different ways. It's also a celebration of resilience. For those species, and you know, that are still with us despite all of the challenges they face these days, but also the resilience of the human spirit, and how that is often tied to birds, literally and metaphorically.
And finally, to integrate.
Yeah, so to integrate is to bring it all together, right? It's a complex world. We're complex beings, and birds themselves are not all that simple in the way they move through the world. So to integrate is bringing all those other themes that we just spoke about together in a way that is systemic, that recognizes that each of these different themes is alive within us and enlivens our experience of the natural world through our relationship with birds.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Jamie K. Reaser, writer, ecologist, co-founder of the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center and World Migratory Bird Day. And we're talking about the book that she co-edited and contributed to with J. Drew Lanham, Dawn Songs, A Birdwatcher's Field Guide to the Poetics of Migration. Jamie, could I ask you to read one of your pieces?
Sure, happy to do that. So I'm going to select one of the prose poems in the collection, and it's called Do Branches Delight? And this is in the To Wonder section. Do branches delight in the bird? Do they hold tight to the nest, feeling proud and responsible? Do they believe the singing is for them, a lyrical prayer for a life, for a long life, or maybe a blessing as gratitude, reciprocity? is it coincidence that their leaves come and go as the birds come and go? Do birds delight in the watcher? Do they feel seen in the way that humans long to be seen? Do they take note of form and behavior, field characteristics? Do they want our affections, or are mornings for them about the fullest extent of their tolerance, for some short, for others long? Are we to be unrequited lovers? Oh, my dearest, no. I have reason to believe that we keep rising early and showing up in edgy places because we've had the experience of something looking into our eyes and choosing to stay for a while, choosing our company, choosing us. I go to the woodland, the meadow, the water's edge, with hopes and dreams, with just enough knowledge to pry the magic loose from the breaking day. When I lift the binoculars, it can be science, and it can be mythos simultaneously. Don't take one with you unless you bring the other. It's a rose-breasted grosbeak, and it's a god whose heart bleeds, his lament for the soul of man too great to be contained within his feathered chest. In the branches, there is song.
That is a really wonderful piece, Janie. And I really feel that when I'm in the field. You've been doing field work for so long. Do you still get that kind of an emotional charge when you're out in the field?
Oh, I definitely do. Every chance I can get to get away from the computer and get outside.
I so empathize with that. Talk to me about your grandfather. You wrote an interesting thing about your grandfather in that first essay about how important it was to molding who you are.
Yeah, so the grandfather mentioned is my mother's father, and he led an interesting life. He was a professor of engineering at both Lafayette and Princeton. Very bright man, but also, especially as he got older, a very shut-down man. His father had died when he was, I think, 2-3 years old, somewhere in there. And his infant sister, died at about the same time, leaving his mother very distraught. She brought my grandfather up in all the basic necessities. He was well tended, but not in ways that he received the care and tending and nurturing that every child deserves. So his relationship with the natural world was very distant. And I refer to some of it in the book as the wintering grounds. On the other side of the family system, my grandmother's grandfather, my great-grandfather, and that side of the lineage, there was a very close connection to nature. And the relations tended to revolve around being outdoors. I've got some fantastic old photos of my great-grandfather and his family at various camps where they're sitting around from bird watching or fishing, and their whiskey bottles sitting on top of all the watermelons. But it was my grandmother, his daughter, who taught me how to fish and how to find rocks, and we'd sit in her yard and watch squirrels and birds. So between what came down from her side of the family and my grandfather's challenges, there was a real comparison and contrasting about nature and human nature. And I think that's part of what was pivotal in my conservation journey, where, you know, I've worked in the field quite a bit with a wide range of organisms, not just birds, but have always been attentive to the human nature aspects of conservation, and that's one of the reasons that Dawn Songs is very much a nature and human nature perspective in the collection.
You translated a work that's in this book, and I don't want to attempt to pronounce it, because if I do damage to it, I feel bad. But it's on page 130. It's Rai Ilaquamab.
Yeah, it's the original work was in Mayan.
Wow.
And then the author translated that into Spanish, and I helped move the Spanish into English.
Is that a language you're comfortable with?
Not particularly. I was, you know, able to do it for this, but I'm far from fluent. And
I did
pass it on to a couple of my native Spanish speakers to double check it.
How do you pronounce the title? Do you have a good?
You would need to ask the author in order to get it correct.
It.
I probably would not do it.
So okay, I feel the same
way. It's a very glottal language.
Do you feel, as a translator, did you feel an awesome responsibility for getting their ideas across? It always struck me that people who do translation works, you have such a responsibility to take.
It's even more challenging in poetics.
Yeah.
You know, we had, as you noticed, there are a number of pieces in here that have been translated, because we wanted to include authors from across the Western Hemisphere. And one of the challenges I had as an editor is working with the translators to make sure that the translations carry the poetic essence, that they weren't necessarily dry literal translations of what the authors were trying to convey. So it did take a good bit of work back and forth to make sure that the translations were true to the essence that the author had intended.
Two of the poems that you wrote just really struck me, because I had just seen those birds when it came to your poems, the yellow warbler and the oven bird. Why did you choose those two species?
Yeah, so the yellow warbler poem was actually written to go with the cover art by Mark Collins, who's a fabulous artist, best known for his watercolor works. He did an acrylic for the cover of Dawn Songs. So that's simply the impetus.
So there's no special connection to the yellow warbler for you.
Yeah, it's explicitly to complement the book itself. And then the oven bird piece is actually one of the pieces that I brought forward of my works that had been previously published. And that is part of a collection of pieces that are very natural history oriented, inspired by my walks in the Blue Ridge Mountains,
which is a warbler hothouse.
It is, yes, very much so, especially during migration.
Is that one of the last strongholds of the cerulean warbler too? I think is in are in those hills.
I'm not sure where the status range is at the moment. I've okay. not been able to see one yet myself in a while.
We have a few that breed in Massachusetts, but they're in an incredibly small, you know, restricted area, and that's about it. I mean, I'm just amazed that they come all the way up here. There are works in this book that just really personally struck me. How would you recommend people to read a complex book like this? Just dip into it whenever they feel like it?
Yeah, I think there are multiple ways to go at it. I mean, there are certainly people who have a tendency to read cover to cover.
Yeah.
There, you know, are opportunities, given the different sections we have, to also move with it along with your mood, right? Or to seek it as a reference, you know, if you have something to celebrate, right? Or a friend is going through a grieving process, to share work from that section. Go ahead and read something out of To Know, you know, at the next scientific meeting you're attending. So there are ways to pick up individual pieces thematically. Maybe you have just seen a rose-breasted grosbeak.
Yep.
And you want to pull out a piece about rose-breasted grosbeak. So you can also let the birds lead the way. And then, as you pointed out, we have a section at the end that you can use as a guidepost.
Well, that seemed like almost like a teacher's guide.
It is, but it can also serve as an individual guide, you know, to the works. So for some folks, they might be interested in, you know, following along the questions that are in that section as a way to track their way through the book.
I can see people bringing this book into the field and just every once in a while stopping and then reading a piece.
And that was the intent. It's one of the reasons it's called a Birdwatcher's Field Guide to the Poetics of Migration, because we wanted something that people would take with them, you know, out to the field as a way of bringing the lyric narrative to the birds. You know, again, the concept of showing up for the birds. For World Migratory Bird Day last year and this year, I've encouraged people to take the book out there and recite works for the birds.
Excellent. My guest tonight has been Jamie K. Reeser, writer, ecologist, co-founder of the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center and World Migratory Bird Day. And we're talking about a book that she co-edited with J. Drew Lanham, Dawn Songs, A Birdwatcher's Field Guide to the Poetics of Migration. Jamie, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, and happy birding.
Always. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.